We're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On this week's show, I'll speak with the legendary jazz pianist Bob James. He'll be performing in Indianapolis at the Jazz Kitchen on Friday, August 11, and Saturday, August 12. Bob James gained fame during the 1970s for his recordings with CTI Records. Bob's CTI albums featured innovative orchestral arrangements and funky jazz beats. These records struck a chord with listeners, and Bob became one of the best-selling jazz artists of the 1970s. In 1978, Bob's composition Angela was used as the theme song for the hit television show Taxi, which pushed Bob's work further into the world of mainstream pop music. The arrival of the 1980s took Bob's music into unexpected new territory. His recordings caught the ear of early hip-hop DJs and beatmakers. And today, Bob James is one of the most sampled artists in the history of hip-hop music. Bob James will join me in a moment to cover all of this and more. We'll discuss his early years creating experimental avant-garde music and the Indiana Music Festival that launched his career in jazz. But first, let's hear one of Bob's most iconic recordings. From his 1974 album One, this is Nautilus. That was the legendary jazz pianist Bob James with Nautilus. And Bob James is my guest this week. Let's join our conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today, Bob. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of your work.
Thank you so much for listening to it.
Yeah, and I do a lot of programs on the history of jazz music in Indiana, and I think our listeners will be fascinated to know that Indiana played a role in your evolution in jazz. The Notre Dame Collegiate Jazz Festival in South Bend, Indiana, is the oldest and longest-running jazz festival in the state. In 1962, you performed at the festival. Your trio was named the best combo, and there were some amazing judges that year, including Henry Mancini and Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones took a serious interest in you and your work. He signed you to Mercury Records and produced your debut solo album, Bold Conceptions, from 1963. Can you share any memories of performing at the Notre Dame Jazz Festival and how that experience helped shape your early career?
Well, I can definitely reinforce that it was a huge, that Indiana played a huge role in my life, if for no other reason than going there for that festival. It definitely gave me the confidence because we prevailed at the festival and did so well that it gave me, I was considering moving to New York at that time to go into the jazz field. And this, I think, kind of catapulted that. Especially that was the time that I not only met Quincy Jones as a result of him being a judge, but we became friends, and he continued to be a big influence on me later in life. So yes, it was a very big deal. My memories are fading a little bit, but I can still remember quite a few things about that time. It was not something that me or my bass player and drummer were thinking about winning or competing, actually, when we first made the decision to go down there. we were playing some pretty avant-garde music at that time. You'd almost call it crazy music, some of it. And we sort of wanted to confront the establishment, and most of those kind of competitions, and certainly in this jazz one, there was an expectation that we'd be playing some straight ahead bebop kind of jazz, but we only did that about half of the time, and the rest of the time we were playing some pretty out kind of stuff. And I had no idea at the time, but I think that was what really prominently caught Quincy Jones's ears, that we were different from anybody else that was performing there. And maybe he saw it as a kind of bravery to explore and to try something unusual. But whatever those reasons were at the time, it still remains in my memory. It puts a smile on my face.
I know some of those festivals were recorded. Have you ever heard if there was a recording of your performance at the festival?
Well, totally coincidentally, yes, I knew that they were recorded, and somewhere deep in my not very well organized boxes and boxes of old tapes, I think there might be one, an old analog tape that I had. But I did an interview just yesterday, actually, for someone in England who had come to my concert in New York and asked for an interview. And as we were doing a Zoom video, and as he started the interview, he held up this LP from that festival. And there it was, the LP that apparently at some point actually got released. And my name was on it, but there was none of the names of the songs or anything. It was minimal kind of information. But I had no idea that there would be an LP. And I kind of shamelessly hinted around to him that if he was willing to give it up, I'd be willing to buy it back from him or whatever, because I'd love to have that from my memories.
That's incredible. I've never heard of it. Was it a privately pressed recording, or was it something that was officially released by the festival? Do you know?
Well, you know, I think the logo was CJF, something like that. And I remembered that for some reason. Maybe it was from a program or something, College Jazz Festival.
Yeah, Collegiate Jazz Festival. Yeah, that's what it was called. Yeah.
So there was this logo on the front of the LP, the big CJF. And I think there were my music wasn't the only one on it. It was some music from the other groups, but he said it was very minimal information. So maybe it was a bootleg. I don't know. He couldn't figure that out either when in looking at it. So, but he kind of indicated to me that he was going to send it to me after we finished the interview. So maybe I can find something more out about it in the future.
Amazing. I have to get back digging in the crates and see if I can pull that one out. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is Bob James. We've been discussing his breakthrough performance at the Notre Dame Jazz Festival in 1962. Shortly after I spoke with Bob, I was able to track down a rare recording of his performance, and we'll listen to an excerpt from that concert now. Recorded on Friday, April 6th of 1962, this is the Bob James Trio performing in South Bend, Indiana. Thank you. That was the Bob James Trio performing live at the Notre Dame Jazz Festival in April of 1962. And Bob James is my guest this week. Let's return to our conversation as we discuss his early work in experimental avant-garde jazz. And Bob, as you mentioned, you were playing very different music in the 1960s than the music you became famous for in the 70s. It was avant-garde music. You called it a crazy music a few minutes ago. You recorded your second album, Explosions, in 1965 for Bernard Stolman's ESP disc label. At that time, ESP was the premier label for free jazz and experimental music of all kinds. Sun Ra recorded for the label, Albert Eiler, Ornette Coleman. Explosions featured your trio collaborating with Robert Ashley and Gordon Mumma, two gigantic figures in avant-garde electronic music. And Explosions has been called the first album to mix jazz and electronic music. I'm so curious how you came to record this unique album for ESP and how you feel about the record today.
Well, you can imagine 60 years, I guess, have gone by, more or less, since that time. And I'm extremely proud of that time in my life. And it's a very, very happy memory. It was one of the few really positive opportunities after moving to New York that I had to do any kind of recording. And I don't remember exactly how my name got brought up to Bernard Stolman, but I did have some reputation that resulted from the Notre Dame Jazz Festival to make an entree after I moved to New York. Having that kind of an opportunity with the record label where he literally said he wants the artist to choose exactly what they want to do. He was not going to inject any producer type limitations or to try to get me to go in a more conventional direction. So that definitely was given the green light to do it. I took it out as far as I wanted to go, and it happened almost simultaneously with me getting a job being pianist and music director for Sarah Vaughan, which was in a much more conventional mold. And I think I would have lost my job if I put too much avant-garde music into that gig.
That's unbelievable that you were doing these things nearly simultaneously.
Yeah, in thinking back on it, I can't even believe it myself. Occasionally I talk about it with friends and some young musicians who are pursuing their own version of pushing the envelope or going into the avant-garde world. And for me, it became an opportunity to just literally figure out what music can mean when you're communicating with an audience. What do you want to project? Do you want to project excitement? Do you want to project romance? Do you want to project danger? And I can remember studying that somewhat, because majoring in composition in college and having my professors talk to me about those kind of things. And literally it makes you try to figure out how you're going to choose. And I think what has carried with me, even though I didn't really go into the avant-garde field full time, I've always felt that I wanted the music to be full service and unpredictable to some degree, so that I can give my audience surprises and take them on an adventure that they didn't necessarily know that they were going on. So when music gets too predictable to me, that's when I become suspicious of it. And when I think back on my memories of how at its most daring, there were still people that found that exciting and found it something that was worth going on that adventure with me.
Let's pause and listen to an excerpt from the Bob James Trio's 1965 recording for ESP Disc. Off the album Explosions, this is Wolfman.
Wolfman.
Cultural Manifesto will return with more words and music from Bob James after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is the legendary jazz pianist Bob James. He'll be performing in Indianapolis at the Jazz Kitchen on Friday, August 11, and Saturday, August 12. Before we return to my conversation with Bob, let's listen to a track from his 1977 album, Heads. This is Nightcrawler. That was Bob James with Nightcrawler. And Bob James is my guest this week. Bob has worked with some of the greatest legends in Naptown jazz, including J.J. Johnson and Freddie Hubbard. Bob produced Hubbard's 1978 album, Windjammer, and provided arrangements on Hubbard's 1975 record, Polar AC. Let's return to our conversation as we discuss Bob's connections to the Indianapolis jazz scene. And Bob, I want to go back to our jazz heritage here in Indiana. 2023 marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of Wes Montgomery, the great jazz guitarist. He's one of our biggest jazz heroes here in Indianapolis. I know you played on a few different tribute projects dedicated to Wes, including Earl Klugh's composition Wes, which was on your 1984 album Two of a Kind. You also played on Lee Ritenour's 1992 album Westbound. You and Wes Montgomery shared a label, CTI, though I believe you started working with Creed Taylor after Wes passed. Any thoughts you want to share on Wes Montgomery's music, and did you ever have a chance to meet him?
Well, first of all, thank you for incredible research and insight, awareness of how I was at least indirectly associated with Wes. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan and admired him, and I saw his very, very big influence on so many different guitarists, probably every jazz guitarist I ever played with. If that name was brought up, they would acknowledge how big an influence he was. Unfortunately, no, I didn't. I was after that time when Creed Taylor produced those albums for him. It was before my time there. And I regret that I did not have that opportunity. I only knew him as a fan.
Another Indianapolis jazz hero I wanted to ask you about is Freddie Hubbard, who also recorded for CTI. And I believe you did some arrangements on his 1975 album, Polar AC. Were you working directly with Freddie at all?
Well, I actually did produce, somewhat later than that project, I produced his album, Windjammer.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Columbia, and I was a huge fan of Freddie Hubbard. He was... rough and tough guy, not the easiest guy to get along with and communicate with. And I remember it being challenging as a producer because I wanted him to play his full out virtuosic jazz. And he was seeing me at that time as a somewhat commercial type producer. And he let it be known that what he wanted was a hit at that time. He wanted me to make him some money, I think it was. So I had to actually fight to do any adventurous jazz stuff that would showcase what I thought was so brilliant about him. One song that I remember from the Windjammer album that I produced was a song called Neo Terra. And I'm very proud of that cut because I think it showcased him when he was going at it full out, playing like no other trumpet player before or since has ever played. And to this day, I remain a very big fan and I wish that I had had more opportunity to play with him.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause and listen to a track from Freddie Hubbard's 1978 album Windjammer. We'll hear Neo Terra, produced and arranged by Bob James. That was Freddie Hubbard with Neo Terra, produced and arranged by my guest this week, Bob James. He'll be performing in Indianapolis at the Jazz Kitchen on Friday, August 11, and Saturday, August 12. Bob's legacy extends beyond jazz music. During the 1980s, his recordings caught the ear of hip-hop DJs and electronic music producers. Today, Bob James is one of the most sampled artists in the history of hip-hop music. One of the earliest Bob James samples to gain notoriety was his 1975 recording, Take Me to the Mardi Gras, famously used in Run DMC's Peter Piper.
Now Peter,
Piper,
pick peppers, but run rock,
rhyme,
Humpty,
Dumpty,
fell
down,
that's his art,
time,
Jackie,
nimble,
what,
nimble,
and he was
quick,
but jam,
master,
mud,
faster, Jacks or Jays,
his bad little Bo Peep, Cole lost her sheep, and Rip Van Winkle fell a hell asleep, and out of chillin' somewhere in Wonderland, Jack serving Jill bucket in his hand, and damn, master Jay, flicking out that sound, the turntables might wobble, but they don't fall down.
Bob's composition, Nautilus, has been sampled hundreds of times. You can hear Nautilus in dozens of classic hip-hop tracks, including Eric B. and Rakim's Follow the Leader, Slick Rick's Children's Story, and Ghostface Killah's Daytona 500. Bob's music has also been sampled by house producers. His 1982 recording Spunky was used in Moody Man's classic 1999 track Shades of Jay. Let's return to my conversation with Bob James as we discuss his thoughts on sampling. And Bob, I grew up in the 1990s, and like a lot of people in my generation, I first became aware of you through the use of your music in hip-hop. You're one of the most sampled artists in hip-hop music. I believe the producer Ninth Wonder said you should be on the Mount Rushmore of hip-hop alongside James Brown. And you've really come to embrace your role in the culture of rap music. I think you played a concert earlier this year at the Blue Note with Talib Kweli and Slick Rick and some other notable figures. I'm curious how you feel about your legacy as a jazz musician and composer being so deeply intertwined with the history of hip-hop music.
I still have to admit that I'm very, very confused about why they chose me in the first place. How my music reached that point where it did become influential in that way. And mostly up until this year, I've stayed at a distance. I've tried to license my music fairly but firmly to try to put forth my feeling that the protection of copyrights is one of the most important things that we can do as creative artists. But still, I was intrigued. And what's going on? What did I what put me in that place where they sampled me so much. So I decided to go a little bit hands-on this year. And yes, I did that a few nights there at the Blue Note with Talib being the host and bringing in some other hip-hop artists. And I was actually on the stage with them, so playing a completely different role than just having my recordings from 40 years ago be sampled and there as chunks in their music. I was actually sitting there at the keyboard trying to figure out what to do. And I was both flattered and kind of excited, but also confused. But how would I play in context with it? Talib had a really good band, so they made me feel at home, and they had done some preparation on the tunes that they did of mine. And it was fun, but ultimately, without going too deep into that, I have pretty much decided that my home base, where I want to be for the rest of my productive life, is back in the jazz field, playing the piano with a good rhythm section and staying closer to home. I learned a lot. I have great respect for that world, but it's not my world. And the way that the music was used was very much related, I think, to the choices that I made for rhythm players and the grooves that seemed to resonate with making these rappers want to hear that rhythm when they're creating their rap lines. I watched RZA. I went out to his, he's the kind of nominal leader of the
Wu-Tang Clan.
Wu-Tang Clan, yeah. And just the way he worked, I spent a few days with him in the studio, and I was so much fish out of water, so much trying to figure out how we could communicate creatively being in the same room. And the fact that we both had respect for each other and got along and we laughed and everything, still his art was so completely different from mine that it to this day, I think I'm just happier being at home in my contemporary jazz world.
Building on that, you're home in the contemporary jazz world. You'll be here in Indianapolis at the Jazz Kitchen on August 11th and 12th with special guest Andrei Chamut, a young Ukrainian saxophonist. I know you just released an incredible live album with your trio, Feel Like Making Live. And I'm going to play a track off that record. Anything you want to say about this tour or the musicians you're working with or coming to Indianapolis to perform?
Well, it's the youngest group of guys that I have played with. And I think at one point I was trying to do the math and I added up all three of their ages and I didn't quite come up to my advanced age. So it gives some kind of indication. And part of it is me trying to keep up with them. Part of it is me enjoying the role of being a little bit mentor to try to help bring out the best. They're all three extremely talented. The youngest is my drummer, James Atkins, who is just exploding with talent, literally, and exploding at the drums as well. I know the fans that come to hear our show will see the extreme potential that's going on there. And I do everything I can to keep him under my reins, but it's sometimes almost impossible. He just has got to go his own way, and it's really fun to hear him. My bass player, Michael Palazzolo, has been with me the most, and he was featured not only on that Feel Like Making Live album, but also on my album, Espresso. He's been traveling around the world with me for 5 years now, and I just have so much fun watching his talent and his confidence grow, and he gives me just great support. But the most special member of this group is the Ukrainian saxophonist Andriy Shmut, and he is a phenomenal talent, but the timing of him being able to be with his wife and daughter here in the U.S. and able to make music in a very inspired way gives me the opportunity to show my support for this incredible conflict that's going on with Russia. And I hope it can come to a peaceful conclusion. Just knowing through Andriy, the spirit of the Ukrainian people is so high. And I had a chance to go there on a couple of occasions and meet some of the musicians from Kyiv, the capital. And I know that jazz music is the essence of expressing freedom. And if we can express that through our music and send out the spiritual message of staying strong, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do that through collaborating with Andriy.
Finally, Bob, you mentioned being a mentor to young musicians, and so much music that's been recorded has a very short shelf life. Today, there's still so much interest in you and your work, whether it's in the jazz world or in the world of hip-hop and rap. How does that feel at this point in your life?
It feels great. Mm. It feels great that I can rage against any form of retirement.
Yeah.
I have no desire whatsoever. And the fact that there's still this kind of venue like the Jazz Kitchen and like some other places that I'm so happy to see them still exist successfully, where I can go in that jazz club type of setting that's more intimate than the formal concert hall and play adventurous music. And that's really basic piano, bass, drums format, which is classic and my favorite thing to do in life. And bringing it to Indianapolis, where I can pretend that I'm starting all over again, like the Notre Dame Jazz Festival, is very almost too much. I better not think about that too much. I'll get too sentimental.
Yeah, yeah. Our listeners can go to bobjames.com to learn everything they want to know about what you're up to these days. And Bob, I can't thank you enough for taking time to do this. As I said, I'm a huge, huge fan of your work, and it was an honor to have you on the program. So thank you.
Thank you for asking such great questions, and I'll look forward to seeing you in person.
Absolutely. Take care.
Okay. Bye, Kyle.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks to my guest, Bob James. Let's end this week's show with a track from Bob's 2022 album, Feel Like Makin' Live. We'll hear Angela, better known as the theme from Taxi. Check out the Cultural Manifesto podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Cultural Manifesto is hosted and produced by me, Kyle Long. Thank you for listening.